Welcome to the Black Canadian Content Creators Podcast, a show where we focus on celebrating content creators who live or are born in Canada and identify as Black, African, Caribbean, Mix, or Afro-Canadians. That was fun. I'm your host, Shirley Joseph. Today I'll be speaking to a OG member of BCanCC Facebook group, Nicole Bedeau, who is an entrepreneur as a digital marketing expert. Nicole is a communication professional with a BA in English Literature from the University of Toronto and a postgraduate certificate in Corporate Communication and Public Relations from Centennial College. Through BLPR Digital, she excels at connecting businesses with their ideal customers using digital media. With the necessity of Black-owned media, allblackteal.com is coming. It's already here, but it's also going to be amplifying even further in the new year with work of creators, community workers, resources, and opportunities for fun in Black-friendly spaces. So prepare yourself for another episode of BCanCC Podcast with special guest Nicole Bedeau at BLPR Digital on all social platforms. You ready? Enjoy the convo. Welcome, everybody, to Black Canadian Content Creators. It's so nice for you to be here and be part of this conversation I'm having today with Nicole Bedeau from BLPRDigital.com. She is an amazing, amazing digital strategist and public relation expert. How are you, Nicole?
I'm great, Shirley. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being part of the show. Actually, I don't know if you noticed, but I mean, it's supposed to align the way that it aligns because you are one of the early first people adapters, members of Black Canadian Content Creators in the group. So thank you for your time today, having this convo with me.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Everything you say about me is true of you too. You're an excellent marketer. You know, you know what it's like to try and find content of other people's to amplify and promote. So I know you know.
Yeah.
That I'm in.
We know. So yes. I got to know Nicole. How I met you was through you used to be the running the Toronto chapter of Black Bloggers United.
That's right. That's true, yeah.
Now, were you doing that while also running your business with BLPR?
Yeah, I was. Yes. So, you know, I always have 100 hustles going on at once, like a true Jamaican. And I had my business, and then I got involved with, I can't pass up a good opportunity. When I see something interesting, I can't help but get involved. And I saw a post for Black Canadian Content
Black
Bloggers United on Twitter one day. And I, you know, clicked around and thought, oh, this is interesting. They're bloggers. You know, I don't get to see them very often. And we have a few great Black bloggers in Canada, but I don't see any opportunity for us to meet or do anything collectively and help each other and promote each other. So, you know, I wonder what it's about. And I contacted the founder of the blog, and she said, well, there's no one in Canada right now, but if you want to start a chapter, please, by all means. So, you know, I jumped in with both feet, and I just contacted the Black bloggers I did know and said, come out to a meeting, we'll chat about what our challenges are and how we can help one another promote each other's blogs. So that became a monthly meeting, fast forward about a year in, and my husband and I got married, and we're old parents, as I like to say, met each other late in life. You know, I was already 32. He was already 43.
Wow.
So we really wanted a baby. So about a year into our marriage, you know, I was on the baby train. I just wanted to get pregnant. And I said, I have to cut back on the 100 different activities that I do. So I had to leave the group. And so I left the group. I was still, you know, working in my business. I had my regular clients. I was also volunteering. I stopped doing that. And then within a couple months, I did get pregnant. So it worked. But I just had to really cut down on my activities and kind of sit myself down at home for a little bit.
Reset, like do a little priority reset, right?
Yeah, calm, reduce the stress of your life, you know, all of that. And it did work. But now, you know, our baby is 20 months old. I used to laugh at people who would count the months of their kids. I would say, just say one, just say two. But it makes a huge difference, 1 month to the next. You have a whole other kid. The development is wildly different. So I do say that she's 20 months now, and she's talking and running and playing and interested in everything. She's a little parrot. She repeats everything you say. So she's super busy. So Mama is kind of interested, and I do have my regular clients through BLPRdigital.com. Thank God. I have, you know, I haven't had to hustle for clients for a few years now, but I'm still interested in other things. And I worked briefly with the creator of All Black TO, and we worked for a while together. She has a full-time job, and after a while, she couldn't afford to keep me. That's the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
And with the work that I did on it, I am an analytics person. I look at the numbers. I saw the unique visitors going up every single month. And I see that she doesn't have time to put into the blog itself. And I just couldn't get it off my mind. So after a year, I said, give it to me. Sell it to me. I'll buy it.
Really?
Yeah. And she wasn't ready to sell, but she was ready to collaborate.
Okay.
So we're collaborating on it, and I'm giving it a year, and I'm inviting anyone from the Black community or who is doing something for the Black community in the GTA to contribute their content or talk about their events. Just tell us what's going on, and we'll find a way to publicize and amplify it for you.
Okay. So, like, before we dissect further about All Black TO, because I'm curious, and I think it's definitely a need. And that's something that is lacking, you know, like compared to in the United States, and you're looking at the Black community, you have choices in terms of digital, you know, marketing or content in magazines, right? You have Essence and you have Blavity. But when you come, like Canada, there's really not, I mean, there's one, you know, that we do know of. Yeah. But I think having a space, especially that's Toronto focus, sounds really good. But before we go into, like, I'm curious to know about, like, what the future is for All Black TO. I wanted a little bit, let's dig a little bit about you and BLPR Digital Strategy. So you have, how did you, first, how was it growing up? What were you into, or what did you think, this is what I want to do, or I'm passionate, or be when I grow up? What did you want to be?
I thought I might be interested in law, because it was a lot of reading and arguing, and I'm really good at that. So my family always thought I might be a lawyer. I thought I might go into teaching also, because again, it's a lot of reading and talking to people, and I like doing that. So anything that involves reading, essentially, maybe some writing and dealing with people, I would be interested in. And my passion beyond all passion growing up was ice skating.
Oh.
I love skating. I was a little figure skater, always the only black one on the ice. But I competed in just locally Ontario figure skating. And I went as far as I could go until about age 17. And then it became a choice. You know, are you going to keep skating or are you going to go to university? And it wasn't even a question. I'm going to go to university. It wasn't that much of a blowaway talent that, you know, I'd have to forego school to skate.
Were you a big fan? Like, what did you think when you first saw Surya Bonaly, the French?
I remember Surya Bonaly, the backwards flip. Yes.
I was like, wow, she's a superhero.
Yes, she's amazing. But the thing that got me into skating was 1988 Olympics, Calgary. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Watching Elizabeth Manley. I don't know if you remember her.
The name sounds familiar.
She's blonde. She had a little pixie, a little short haircut. But it was the dress. She was wearing a bright pink dress. I will never forget it. Fuchsia dress, spinning. She was just sitting on the ice with the fuchsia dress. And I just thought it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. A little girl in a bright pink dress, spinning, you know. So after that, I begged my mom to skate, and I started with Parks and Recreation.
I do remember her. She had this. I do remember. Yes, the pixie short hair. Yes, she was badass.
Yes, and she was Canadian, and mm-hmm. I think she won a bronze that year. But that was my first intro to ice skating. I begged my mom to skate after that, and she was convinced that I would hurt myself.
She's Jamaican, she Yeah.
Yes, I know. What does she know about ice skating? Nothing. But I loved it. I just soaked it up. I did all of the, spent every second practicing that I could, and did all the extras that I could, and begged my mom to do extra skating camps in the summer. I skated all winter, 5 days a week, and weekends, and it was crazy. But it was a great experience. You know, I got to work at something I really, really loved. I also did all the other sports. I did swimming. I did play the piano. I did a lot of other things. I was very active as a child, but skating was my true love, you know? So after I quit at age 17, mm-hmm. I couldn't quit completely because I still love the sport, so I taught skating.
Ah, okay.
So I taught ice skating with the city of Mississauga for 10 years after that.
Oh, wow.
And that was my other passion, joy, love. I loved it. I taught all ages, from preschool, little three-year-olds just learning to stand, to adult skaters, you know, convincing them to let go of the boards and come out here, and, you know, step, the knees up.
Did you ever run into a kid and some parent think, like, they're super talented, but you're like, oof, I don't know.
Actually, no. It was more of the parents who were convinced that they wanted their kids to skate more often in my classes were the parents who did work with their kids outside of class. Mm. And I remember a few little boys, a few four-year-olds who could handle a hockey stick and were zipping in and out and could do their crossovers, and the dads were real side of the rink parents, you know, coaching from the sidelines. But there were some real Wayne Gretzky to be contenders at four.
Wow.
I'm already looking at my daughter like, okay, I'm giving you a few more months, and then we'll try out these skates. And see if you like it. But I'm not into forcing. You know, I don't think you should force your kid into doing anything in terms of recreation that they don't want to do. There's so much available that there must be something that they like that you can support.
Teaching, so you taught from 17, you're now you're 27, it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
Around that last year, what changed? What shifted? Were you like, I'm tired, like I think I've done enough in figure skating and I want to try something else?
No, well, I started to feel nervous, actually. I knocked wood. I had, in all the classes I taught, and teaching put me through university. So during the summers, I would work full-time at the Department of Immigration, Citizenship and Immigration. And then in the winters, I would teach skating. So, and it was a great job to have because it paid really well for a few hours.
For short,
so you'd only work 3 or 4 hours at a time. But I always worked the weekends. Weekend shifts were the best because you could get a good 5 hour chunk. But it was always super early. You had to be on the rink at 8 or 9 a.m., which meant you had to be there at 7:30, you know, and in your 20s, you're going out with your friends and drinking and having a few drinks and having fun on the weekends. But
that's
I still had to be up there. And so it was a great job. I was really appreciative to have it. I really loved and enjoyed it. Kids loved to be in my class. Kids would ask to be in my class. And of course, in true Nicole fashion, I also taught on the side. Taught on the side of teaching. I had another business in just in private lessons. And so I just had an accident in my class. And suddenly
there was an accident in your class?
Yes. So you're dealing with a 1-inch blade, which essentially is a knife.
Yeah.
Your kids, you know, so all sorts of things happen. Kids get cut. They fall down. They break their faces. They throw up in a corner. Yes. And I've just been really fortunate that nothing had ever happened on my watch in my class for 10 years. I think, you know, this is amazing. It's good. I really don't want to be responsible for anything terrible happening to my students. So I think what precipitated that was I witnessed the kid kicking another child on the rink in his skate. So you're kicking someone with a blade, with a knife.
A kid was kicking another kid? With the skates on?
Goodness. It wasn't a serious fight. It was just an unconscious, you know. And I felt like that. But I'm conscious of, as a teacher, I see, and you are wearing a blade. You might not know that, but I do. So after that incident, you know, it started recurring in my mind over and over. I've never had a really serious accident in my class, except for the very first class I taught, which was pretty traumatic. A grown woman, a lady, in the first introduction, just, hi, how are you? Getting to know you. We're just standing on the ice. We haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. She fell down and broke her tailbone. Mm-hmm. That was the very first class I ever taught. But after that, no accidents for 10 years. Before something happens, I'm feeling nervous, and I shouldn't feel that way when I'm teaching. I should feel free, alert, you know, and ready to help my students. Mm-hmm. So it was just time.
So what?
So that was
it for you. You're like, okay, because it sounds like it was pretty traumatic. Obviously, affected you, and you're like, that's it. I'll just focus. Now, at the time you were saying it was paying the bills for you, you were at University of Toronto, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so during my 2002 to 2006, dating myself for you, I was at the University of Toronto doing a degree in English reading. And I loved going to school. I really enjoyed it. After I finished my degree, I didn't know quite what to do with it. So I started, but I fortunately I got a job right away. And the job was as an editorial assistant for an accounting magazine. Snore, snore, snore.
I was just going to say, boring. What do you write?
Yeah, sounds super boring. And it was a lot of scheduling to be handed in and sending it out to other professors for review and making sure that we got to the printers on time and updating the website and managing the events. I was an assistant in managing the events. But every year we had two conferences, and one of the conferences would be in a different location in a different province in the country.
Oh.
So I got to travel a lot, which was great. So I got to see a little bit of Canada. And after 6 years, I thought it was time to go. It was a really stressful environment. Plus, I was just ready to experience something else. And I thought, surely, with my education and experience, and I have great references, I must be able to find something immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was sorely mistaken. I was very wrong. And I gave up my apartment, a cute little apartment at Yonge and Eglinton. I was single and in the city. It was a lot of fun. And I went back home to Mississauga,
mm-hmm.
living with my mom, and went back to school. I did a postgraduate certificate at Centennial College in public relations.
Now, why did you choose public relation? Because it closely relates to your English lit?
It relates to English. My former boss, where I worked, she, the director at my very first job, we became really close friends, very, very close. And she also had an English degree. And she would say to me, you know, if I had my life to live over, I would do a degree in public relations and corporate comms. You can use it for anything. You could do internal communications, which is what I was already doing with newsletters and websites and all of that. Or you can do external communications, social media. You can use it for all manner of jobs in communication.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a professional designation. So I thought, you know what, she's probably right. And so that's what I did. I went back there. It was an intensive program, but it was only 1 year. So 2013, I did the program of PR and corporate comms at Centennial College, and it was the best decision of my entire life. I loved it.
What did you love? What was the area of PR that you loved the most?
Yeah, the takeaway for me was the external communication.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always done internal, you know, sending out newsletter reminders and all of that internally. But you, in those corporate situations, you have a... they have to read it. But when you're doing external communication, you have to be a little more strategic in tailoring your message to who you're talking to.
Mm.
So it's a little more work for you, but there's the payoff of when you do get their attention, you feel like you've really earned it. So I love that part. I love all of the great critiques we got on different types of writing. We did a lot of different types of writing, press releases and writing for social media and writing for all kinds of different types of communication. And we got a lot of guidance on it, on what it should look like, what it should sound like. So I felt a little more confident when I left the program in my writing. And then after that, I did an internship at the Globe and Mail.
Mm.
And during the internship, I started to that was after. But during the internship, I don't remember how I got the first client. But somehow, I met somebody, was talking to them at a party,
mm-hmm.
networking.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
And I was telling them about how much I enjoyed the program, how much I'd learned. And I think they showed me their own website, opened up to me about their own side business. And I looked at the website, and right then and there, I gave some pointers. Do this, do that, improve this way and that. So they appreciated my feedback, and I started freelancing. So I started working on the side, and I noticed I was more enthused about the freelancing I was doing during my lunch break at my internship. But, you know, do my job, and then during lunch I'd sneak off to a corner and open up my computer and do some work over here on working on. I was really excited about that, looked forward to it, thought about it, you know, I was obsessed with it. I thought, I'd like to do this afterwards. So when the internship ended, I applied to jobs, but nothing was biting right away, and it didn't really bother me because I was more interested in doing this other side work. But it didn't pay a lot. You know, I think people have to be really honest about what people can expect when they become entrepreneurs in the beginning. Yeah.
Like, know what you're based on your knowledge and experience to match. Are you saying, like, be aware of where you're at to match with your value? And then as the experience grows, the value grows too, which is how much you pay me?
Would you say? I just find that when you're starting out as an entrepreneur, you have a client base immediately waiting for you to jump into. So your earning potential at the start is probably not huge. Even if you do have professional, because I had professional experience at that point, I'd been working for 8 years, you know, after school. During school, I was also working full time in the summer. So I worked a lot. I had a degree in English, which is essentially what I was doing. Plus, I had another certificate in writing, particularly for communication. Plus, I was a great writer and a fantastic reader. That was my... But I couldn't step into a client base immediately because I'd never been an entrepreneur before. I didn't know how to find clients, write invoices, make sure there was always multiple streams of income. All of those things build what you can expect to make, you know, year after year. But when you're starting out as an entrepreneur, you're going to have one income, your side income. So during that internship, though, it was another great thing that happened was I met a friend of mine who has become one of my partners, my business partners, and she is a graphic designer. I was sent on an errand one day, again, assisting with an event. I was sent to go get something printed, and at the printers, I struck up a conversation with the girl behind the counter who was helping me figure out printing sizes, and she was a graphic designer on the side. And she was working in the print shop by day, and we just hit it off. She came with me to some women's event for, I think it was, on the tip of my tongue who it was. And I think you'll know who it was also. Oh, no. Anyway, can you hear me?
Yep.
Am I echoing? All right. So, went to this event with a women's empowerment event, women in entrepreneurship. We made some great connections, and we've worked together ever since on projects. Sometimes we had parallel projects, working specifically with one another, but we help each other with each other's projects. But for the last 3 years, with this one particular client, we've been able to work together on the same project. It's been amazing. So I met her at this. And then after that, I did do some contract work after that. So I worked for another nonprofit for 8 months, and I worked somewhere else for a year. So I continued doing day contracts. And then on the side at night, I would freelance. And another thing that I tell others, especially in terms of working in the PR or writing space, Fiverr was an amazing resource for me.
So you used Fiverr for some freelance work?
Yes, to practice my craft, get introduced to new. I did about 60 Fiverr jobs. What I learned through that was make it something that you can do very easily, quickly. You have a template for it, so you're not reinventing the wheel every single time. Because you're only making, I know now Fiverr has a pay structure where you can include add-ons and increase your prices, but at the time, so the only price you could charge was $5.
Right.
So $5, I wasn't in it for the $5. I was in it for the practicing my skill and introducing myself to new people. So that's what I got out of it, the practice. Oh, hold on. And the introducing myself to potentially new clients.
Oh, wait, just a second. There's a weird sound in the background, like a humming sound.
All right, yeah. Somebody just opened the door.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's gone now.
Yeah, introduce myself to new clients. That was the number one thing it did for me. And I met a few good clients through that service who I could work with outside of the service.
That's amazing. So it helped you find not only new clients, but some of these clients also, I'm sure, gave you reference, gave your name or your services as a reference.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant.
Word of mouth, and also just someone to also, yes, build on and refer to when you're pitching to other clients. Say, well, I've done this work here. Add to your portfolio, essentially. I've done this work here. You can talk to this person. See what I've done, and this is what I'd like to do for you. So the more you do that, the better it is for you. The bigger your portfolio, the easier it is to get new work.
And
that's how I did it.
And now, how do you, would you say, because you mentioned networking. How do you utilize networking? Because, I mean, I think it's brilliant, too, that you running the chapter for Black Bloggers United, was a form of networking and people to get to know you and your services and what you do.
Yeah, it was helpful for me in that sense, but I feel that I didn't get a lot of business that way. I didn't find it helped me particularly in that way a lot, but what it did was it helped me to learn about where I was, who's doing what, essentially, who is the go-to blogger for food locally, and you have to know your local area as well as internationally. With social media now, you know, we're all able to watch what Kim Kardashian is doing and a lot of other local celebrities.
Yeah.
It's as if you know them, even though they are all around the world. But what's even more important, from my point of view, is that we know what people are doing right next to us in the real world. Because those are the people you can call on to collaborate with. Get business from them, but when you do get business, you might be able to say, I need someone to do photography and I'm not an expert photographer, so would you mind working with me on this project? And that's how it's been helpful for me, is to expand my base of people I can collaborate with when I do have interesting projects to do.
It's definitely it was a great space that you were running, because I mean I met Eden And who is Black Foodie and Boomy as a PR person. And it was a great way to connect and, get to know what people are doing out there. And like you said, it's about collaboration. So it was a way to extend and perhaps provide opportunities for other people and build this kind of interconnectivity with each other. Because you're right. Yeah. And I think that's in the way why I like the space I created. And I'm sure with Black United, Black Bloggers United, we do tend to look at the big celebrities. But you're right. Like sometimes we by looking at those big public figures, we miss out on the up and coming ones, the people who are up and coming, who are local in your area and are doing great content as well. So spaces like yours was great for that. It put a spotlight and get to know the local people who are bloggers and digital strategists or PR and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and that's kind of what you're doing now with Black Canadian content creators. We're getting to know who our Canadian content creators are.
Yeah, for sure.
Network locally.
Mm-hmm. Now you utilize a lot, which I love. You are a great writer. I'm not a writer. This is the reason why I podcast. I just talk. but you use like blog posts, social media posts, and content. The way you do your content management to display and to showcase what you do as a digital strategist or and PR.
Thank you. I try.
Do you feel a lot of people miss out on that? Like sometimes as content creators, or even businesses, would you say that they need to kind of, that's another form of growing your business or awareness is by showcasing publicly what you do or sharing tips, things like that?
Absolutely. One of the fears that I heard a lot when working with entrepreneur clients was that, I don't want to share this because I don't want someone to take my idea.
Hear that a lot too.
And the bottom line of it is ideas are not special. You're not special because you have an idea. There's nothing new that no one else has ever, never thought of. And people have ideas every day, all the time, but very few people actually. What makes it special is when you can take an idea and create a product or a service, and you can actually provide it, and then you can actually run with it for a long period of time. That is what is difficult, is the maintenance. Is the endurance to stay in business. There are a lot of people who start businesses and fall out after 5 years.
True.
And that's because it's super hard. it's very, very difficult to stay in when you're not making lots of money. Not for money, but still continue to push your business on the side. It's very difficult to maintain your business when maybe your friends and family don't support it. So you have to find other means of people you don't know to support something you've never heard of and trust. It's very difficult to continue a business when you have a family and, as you know, kids and a spouse and other personal demands every day. It's very hard. But the people who can stay in and keep doing it for years at a time and turn a profit, those are the people who are special. So don't be afraid of losing an idea. If somebody can take your idea and turn it into a business and stay in business, God bless them. But the skill that you want to show is that you have endurance. That's what matters, from my perspective, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of backing. There are businesses that exist that get funded very nicely. the founders get a loan, a huge loan from the bank, or they have wealthy family members. But especially in the Black community, a lot of businesses are started with very little capital.
Mm-hmm.
So the emphasis is not on the idea. That is not the obstacle course. Anybody can do that. It's the staying in business once you get in it. So
It's about how to utilize whatever that resource is, whether you have a lot of resource or not. It's the creativeness and the endurance to keep that idea going and to maintain that idea to grow. Right. That is, it's true. It's very difficult.
Changing as you flesh the idea out and you're actually working it in the real world, you find out it's not feasible. It doesn't work. It doesn't turn a profit or whatever else. Just that's what makes you a real star. So having an idea is not the thing that you should be afraid of sharing with the world. If you can share your ideas, a fantastic way of getting people interested. But what can you do to keep them interested in what you're doing? That's the thing that I would put emphasis on.
I saw an article that you wrote, and you've mentioned this too, how you discovered that, you know, that family and friends couldn't help you, and that you had to build much of what makes a business successful on your own. And you discovered that entrepreneurs receive most value, not just from the services, but through networking as well. When did that click for you?
So in the very beginning, day one second away, after I finished school, my family was wondering, okay, so what company are you going to work for next? Where can you get in with a job? You know, practical things that are necessary for life.
Yeah.
And it wasn't coming to me immediately. And I guess I saw the writing on the wall, and I was ready and willing to do something else. And they weren't ready and willing to let that go. You know, looking for, and they would tell me, keep looking. People have jobs. Other people have jobs. Keep looking. And I found within my circle of friends, yes, some people had stable benefits, full-time jobs, but others were struggling to find full-time jobs and were cobbling together and doing all sorts of other things to make things work. And I felt I knew I had a skill that was sellable. So when I told my family and friends about it, they were very confused because nobody I know uses social media professionally.
So you were like, I'm starting, like, were you like, I'm starting a business, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and use social media as a business?
Yes. I'm freelancing in social media. And if you know anyone who has a business on the side or needs some help, let me know. And nobody knew anyone. So at first, they couldn't refer me to anyone. So that was the first thing. I couldn't get any referrals through my friends or family. The second thing was there was no extra money to give to me to start a business. So that didn't exist. And then the third thing was nobody even knew of social media as a business or a professional thing that people did. It was just a casual thing that you look at on your phone 10 times a day. So there was no knowledge, connection, or interest in my immediate circle to draw from. So I had to look outside of that immediately. And as I said, Fiverr was a big help in that area. I could immediately connect to people anywhere in the world. And my very first client I got from there was in North Carolina. And she had a website and needed some assistance with that. And it grew from there. So then I started getting some local interest. People who were friends of friends who had side businesses who were willing to open up. But I find that sometimes you might have a friend who has a business and you would never know. They would never tell you about it.
Yeah.
People are very, I'm not sure why, they feel like if they share it, they might fail or might feel like they're failing if it's not wildly successful right away.
Mm.
So they're very close about that. So it wasn't until I'd been doing it for a little while and talking to people a bit and had examples to show that people started opening up to me about, well, actually, I've been doing this other thing on the side. I wonder what you thought about it. I could get some help. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. A lot of people don't share. They figured, I'm going to share once, you know, my name is out there or I've made X amount of money and or when the business is established, that's when I'll share. And it's true. I think it is the fear of like, what if it doesn't work out? How am I going to look and what am I going to say? And it's like, and I find for the most part, people don't, they more look at least you tried. That's huge.
Yeah. And in this economy that we're in, you have nothing to lose by trying. More millennials than ever are doing driving Uber and delivering with Skip the Dishes and trying to pull their coins together any way they can. So there's no fault. No one will fault you for trying something. Another way of securing your future.
Mm-hmm. So now fast forward to now, you were talking about allblackteal.com, which was started by someone that now you are collaborating with. I remember seeing allblackteal.com actually a good year or so ago. And I just kind of kept my eye on it. And I did see kind of like, you know, a slow progression. What made you excited about getting on board and collaborating to start this new venture on top of your current business with BLPR?
Yeah, well, when I first started working on AllBlackTO about a little over a year ago, what excited me was that the founder, he by day is a social worker. Now, both of my parents are social workers. Worked in Toronto Children's Aid Society for 30-odd years, and they're both retired. But they'd always told me, you know, don't go into the helping profession. It's stressful and draining. But they passed their own professional careers in their retirement. They both volunteer still. So they are set on helping others. And the founder of All Life, I just don't know if she wants me to mention her name or not, so I'm not going to mention her name.
Okay.
But she is a social worker by day, and she posted a lot of flyers or information about youth services or government services for Black people and people of color. And I thought that was very interesting and helpful. Where can we go to figure out, you know, how to get a business grant or how to get mental health care when you're 17 or, you know, how to get help. In and out.
Okay.
Hi, Shirley.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I guess somebody walked in to the party room.
Walked in and walked out.
Okay. Yeah. So you were saying like how to get grants and these kind of information that was being posted on AllBlack TL.
Yeah. She had a lot of connections and a healthy network within the social services community in Toronto. So she provided a lot of good information and resources that I thought was helpful to people. The engagement there. And that's one thing that brands businesses, anyone who's using social media professionally to promote something, and they're putting some money behind it, they're looking for engagement. Engagement is key. They want to see people not just liking the post, but also commenting.
Yeah.
People who are involved, people who actually go to the events that they post about. And that's what I thought was the number one attractive thing about the All Black PO platform, is that the more I posted of not just information about services, but who's who in Toronto, Black people doing interesting things within the city, what even parties and events you could attend on a weekend, people engaged on the platform. They commented, they shared, they thanked us. It was lively. So that was the number one thing. The number two thing is I always check the analytics of the website. I like to see if there is progress, what people are interested in clicking on. And I could see that the viewers were going up week after week. Week after week. And people were finding us through social, so Facebook, Instagram, through Google. The SEO was really great. And it wasn't intentional. It's not that we revamped the entire website SEO. It's that what we were posting, great keywords in it. I was updating the keywords for each post. And then I would tell the organizer of the event, hey, your post is live. Here. Let us know if you have anything else you want us to share.
And
they would share the link.
And you're saying the keyword, the you would update the keywords now on the social or on straight from the site?
Just on the website.
Okay.
Just on the website. So people would be coming to the website every week. And also I think there's just a hunger and a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
People want to know what's going on in Toronto. Day and night, like Thursday or Friday night, saying to my husband, hey, what's going on? Would you like to go to a party? I'd like to go to something. What's going on tonight or tomorrow, Saturday night? I'd love to know. So people were checking for that. So I saw the very helpfully while I was there. And then when I left, it wasn't being updated. So slowly, you know, you have to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'd love to do it consistently for a while to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So now you're now All Black TO. What would you say is a hub, not only to find out what's going on in the Black Toronto community, but what else can people expect in when they go to the site?
Right. So the section is the event section. That's because it's updated the most often. People are interested in, for example, this month of December, there's Braid for Age, Braid-a-thon coming up. There's an album release party. There's the DJ skate nights at Harborfront Center. There's a wide variety of events. So parties are something for you. If you're in fundraisers, there's something for you. If it's music or if it's a lecture also. So anything within the Black Toronto community, we want to highlight. It happens to be from Sudan. So she has her friend circle and her social circle is within the African Toronto community. My roots are from the Caribbean. My mom is Jamaican and I'm married to a Trini. So my social circle is within the Caribbean community of Toronto. So we try and bring together all of the different diaspora. There are other websites that do exist, like in Africa, I think,
mm-hmm.
and that has content for the African, particularly Canada. Mm-hmm. We're more local than that. We're specific to the GTA. We're not talking about things that are happening in Alberta or Montreal. It's just here, GTA. And also, we're not just focused on the African community. We're just on the Caribbean community. We're doing both. So there's that in terms of events. There's resources, so grants, funding. We try to post it there. Resources for programs, enrichment programs, like the program in the summertime. We post about that. So we try and hit all of your life needs, if you will, for entertainment to education to business development. Mm-hmm. We try and hit all of those points so that we're a real help. Because nobody needs one thing, you know?
True. And I see that there's also like an area for businesses, like Black-owned businesses operating offline and online in the GTA, yeah. From the GTA.
Yeah. So just this last month, we did a 10 winter essentials, and all of the winter essentials were Black businesses, owned by Black or provided by Black businesses. So we talked about with that in mind, so that all of the moisture is not sucked out of your hair. Mm. It's the worst. I love mine. I have a flat, it's called Flap Cap, but I got it from a U.S. I didn't know that there was a girl in Canada providing the exact same thing. Not just Canada, the GTA. Mm. There is someone in the GTA who owns Kingston Coils who provides the very same thing. She has toque, she has a winter headband, she's got all kinds of products that you can wear in the wintertime that protect your hair.
Yeah.
It also looks really cute and stylish. We also have wine on there. There's an Ontario winery that's owned by a Black man, Nayari Wine. There's a candle company, there's all sorts of things that you would need over the next few months during season of the year. And all the products are Black-owned in the GTA.
So now, so is the site going through a restructuring? You mentioned this earlier too. So Black, I'm sure if they're listening to this show, they're going to wonder, are you looking for contributors?
Yes. So the one thing is the site was missing previously, some articles.
Yeah.
We don't just want to list listing things for people, you know, a list of a business directory. That's nice, a good reference point. But we also want to talk, have a conversation, and examine things from our point of view. And to do that, we have so far asked for contributions from a few Black bloggers already who've already blogged and had content on their site, and I just happened to come across it and love the article there now about doing your toddler's hair. I don't know. I have a girl, and she's gotten older from an infant to a toddler now. Doing her hair is a challenge. I was always told, you know, oh, you have a girl, you're going to be doing hair. But I never really thought about, okay, she squirms. She can't really sit still for very long.
At all.
But her hair, but her hair is getting longer, and it's hair, natural hair needs, you know, every night, and you know, coconut oil. It's a process. We all know it. We all did it. But I never thought about it from the perspective, okay, now I'm the mom, and I got to figure it out.
Yeah.
So just to hear from another Black mom who's dealing with it, I'm not alone, and some techniques that she's used, and what I might be able to try, that was really helpful for me. So we posted that on the website. So we're looking for more content from Black content creators.
Specifically in the GTA?
in the.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so are you going, so are people able to contribute now, or are you guys going to do like a relaunch in the new year, for the new year, I mean?
Well, so they can send an email to all blackpo@gmail.com, and I'm putting together, I will post their content. But the relaunch will be packaging their stories together in a way that makes sense. So maybe one newsletter that's all about one topic, wellness.
Nice.
We're already working on February, Black Love. Yesterday, I met with Montano St. Jules. He's a photographer from Scarborough who makes beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Is in black and white. He only shoots in black and white of couples and babies too. But his couple pictures really struck me as interesting and beautiful. So we'll be highlighting stories specifically each month that are similar and on a theme. So that will be the launch in the new year. January, we'll have a bunch of stories that are all related that will be released at the same time. So, yeah, we're looking for content. If there's anything that you could, or you just like us to look at your website and pick something, we can do that also. And video content is wonderful also. And the more local you can make it, the better. Because we want to hear stories about where we live.
Mm-hmm. So people can email again. That's allblackto@gmail.com to be a contributor.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to advertise with us also, I should mention, that's an avenue that we can explore also. You know, in the beginning of vlogging, I want to say the early 2000s,
yeah,
pay-per-click advertising was the thing to do. But now, advertisers do all sorts of even more interesting things with advertorials and do anything creative and interesting as a way of promoting products or services in a way. And we also need funding. So we're not going to charge you a whole bunch to advertise with us, but we might charge you a little something.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, to make it valuable, very valuable to you. And you'll reach the audience
that you're trying to reach. Yeah. Mm. Because, yes, definitely. It sounds like if people advertise, they'll know that the audience is from the Caribbean, African, you know, Black Canadian community that's in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Nicole. This was an amazing conversation. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about you. Would never think
I
about
feel like
figure
I
skating.
Too much. I want more. We have to meet offline some other time.
We do.
I want to hear more about you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Where can people find you? I think I want to have you back on the show because I think there's just so much. Like, I was going through some of your articles, like writing compelling captions. Maybe we can talk about that as a content creator, because that is, it's not easy. You know, sometimes when people, you say, oh, I'm like I do digital strategy or social media management. And they look at you like, oh, you just post on social media. And they're like, you have no idea the amount of research that you have to do to look for specific keywords and what makes sense and things like that. So I think that will be next time to have you on to talk about like that kind of, you know, utilizing, really researching and thinking about writing. Sorry, what were you saying?
And getting away from the repetition, you know, you can really get into a brain block when you're doing the same, when you promote products for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one of our clients right now, they're a company that owns a bunch of different hair brands.
Mm.
We write content for five of their hair brands. Each brand But we produce, let's say, 25 posts a month. But we've been doing it for 3 years. So what more can you say? Product every single month for 3 years. There are things. There are ways. Yeah, doing research is a big part of it. Tapping into your creativity and what you need to do to understand the customer. That's the number one. Understanding your audience is key to all of it.
Mm.
Right? So yeah, I'd love to talk about that.
Yes, further. Definitely. Where can people find you, Nicole?
You can at blprdigital.com, or you can just Google BLPR Digital Strategy. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter as BLPR Digital. Everything is the same. And you can email me at info@blprdigital.com.
Awesome. Do you know what's awesome about you, Nicole, is that you are very easy to find. Let me tell you how many content creators or people who have a business online of some sort, and they are so difficult to find. That's another workshop conversation.
I've been told that before. I don't understand why you would make it hard.
Right?
What? Yeah, and you want to take it into the real world. That's my number one thing to explain to content creators, businesses who employ content creators, anyone. Take it offline. You want to be searchable and interesting online, but you also have to exist in IRL, in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Your presence, like, in real life. The two should agree together, offline and online. The two should agree. So, yeah, you want to make it easy for people to interact with you offline, too. Don't forget that part.
And that's the tip for the end of this show. For y'all to take notes and remember.
IRL, in real life.
Thanks, Nicole, for the convo. Oh, and we'll truly appreciate you being on. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. And please, let's talk offline. I gotta talk with you somewhere else and get all the tips on this wife and mommy thing. I'm just searching in the dark.
Yes. We will talk in real life in IRL.
Yes.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I know there's so much more, so much digging and brain kicking of Nicole that I think we need to do on another episode. So get ready to be seen. If you are going to reach out to BLPR Strategic Marketing and Public Relations, because that's what BLPR and the agency will do for you. They will focus on connecting your company with your customer using digital tools. And under the leadership of Nicole Bedeau, they craft traditional marketing strategies with these digital tools to help you gain the attention and trust for your ideal customer and increase your sales. So definitely reach out if you want some help of her services and expertise. Just write to info@blprdigital.com. I'm so excited for Nicole also with this new venture that she's doing, allblackto.com. So if you're looking to be a contributor and you are a Black creator in the GTA, in the community, and you want to basically amplify your voice in 2020, definitely reach out to Nicole and submit an idea, pitch an idea of what you'd like to include on the site by emailing allblackto@gmail.com. Subscribe and never miss the show on iTunes, Spotify, CastBox, or any other podcast player. And if you found value with this episode, I would really appreciate a rating or a review on iTunes or comment on Spotify or CastBox. Oh, and tell your family and friends or fellow content creators about the show. That would also help us out. Follow the show and group on all social platforms by just going to @BlackCanadianCC. In all, again, all social media, or you can search for Black Canadian Content Creators. And at last, if you'd like to join the group, just go to Facebook and search for Black Canadian Content Creators. All right. Till next time. Bye. And be joyful and create.